Welcome to Contagion Connect, a podcast dedicated to bringing you expert insights on key infectious disease topics. We're here today to discuss the infectious disease pharmaceutical pipeline, particularly Cidara, a biotechnology company formed in 2014. Cidara is developing a newer kind of candidate called resifungin that's shown promise in clinical trials, and developing a new antiviral technology, which isn't a vaccine, but could provide universal flu protection on a different basis. We'll talk to CEO Dr. Jeff Stein about these therapies. After speaking with Dr. Stein, we'll hone in on resifungin and chat with Dr. George Thompson, Associate Professor of Clinical Medicine at the UC Davis School of Medicine. Dr. Thompson is an infectious disease clinician and an expert in the mycology field. He was an investigator in Cidara's phase 2 trial of resifungin and is involved in the currently being enrolled phase 3 RESTORE trial. Welcome to the show, Dr. Stein. If you could give our listeners a bit of background about yourself, and then we can get into detail about these upcoming treatments.
Well, sure, Grant. So I've been CEO of Cidara since early 2014 when we got the company up and running. Very much a preclinical company back then, venture-backed with some very high-profile venture capitalists. And we've been on a very fast track since our formation. In 2015, we took the company public. So, this was very much a fast path to becoming a public company and a fast path towards developing resifungin, which is our lead program. So that preclinical molecule back in 2014 is now completing a phase 3 study for the treatment of candidemia and invasive candidiasis. This is a very lethal infection that people typically get in the hospital. Current standard of care is inadequate, and insofar as the mortality rate is 25% or greater on current standard of care. We are also initiating another phase 3 study for the prevention of a broad array of fungal infections in patients getting bone marrow transplants. So these are patients who do not have an immune system so that transplant can take hold, and consequently they are very exposed to getting fungal infections. And those that do have a very high mortality rate of about 60% because of the absence of a functional immune system. So many cancer patients fall into this category of needing a bone marrow transplant. And those that currently are receiving the standard of care antifungal therapy or prevention are discontinuing at a very concerning rate. And those that do discontinue, which is about 35%, have a 60% or higher risk of mortality. So two really important unmet needs, one for the treatment of candidemia, invasive candidiasis, and one for the prevention of a broad array of fungal infections, both phase 3 programs. So we're very proud of that. The company was also formed on the promise of an immunotherapy platform that we call CloudBreak. And the purpose there and the objective was to take the principles that have been well established now in oncology by specific immunotherapy and apply that principle to infectious disease. We do it in a different way than what is being done in oncology, but it appears to be particularly effective in viral infections and specifically very effective in respiratory viruses. So our lead program there is an influenza preventative and treatment called CD377. That is an IND-enabling or institutional new drug-enabling studies right now. And we hope to put that in the clinic sometime by mid-next year. Very exciting program. Could actually represent a universal preventative and treatment effective against all strains of influenza, both seasonal and pandemic, and importantly, in all people, meaning that even people that have debilitated immune systems, that are immune compromised, that cannot respond to even a perfect vaccine, should be able to benefit from CD377. So again, two very exciting programs, and we look forward to continuing to develop those in the clinic.
Excellent. Thank you. Flu is something we're all talking about in infectious diseases, so we can start with those technologies and then pivot back to Rezifungin. So Cidara has that immunotherapy platform called Cloudbreak. Could you tell us a bit about the clinical application of the new therapy and a bit on how it works?
Yeah, I think the most important distinction is that this is not a vaccine. It's actually a long-acting drug that could potentially be administered once the flu season and confer protection against all known strains. So we've tested it against dozens of strains in our laboratories. The NIH is now testing it against the very lethal pandemic strains that we are not certified to deal with in our labs. What they have informed us is that this appears to be the most potent drug that they have tested to date against these pandemic strains. And now we're sending the NIH additional drug supply so that they can conduct animal efficacy studies. But if it turns out similar to the animal efficacy studies we've conducted, we know that it will be very effective. And this gives us some confidence that this could potentially be a once a flu season universal preventative against all strains and importantly in all people. And this is an important distinction that, you know, a lot of people miss when they think about the universal flu vaccine that, you know, we have yet to see. It's universal or could potentially be universal only in the sense of the influenza strains, right? That's not universal in all people because there's over 100 million people in the U.S. that do not respond to vaccines. And so they are going to be susceptible to getting the flu. And in fact, we know that, you know, upwards of 20 million people got the flu last year and had about 14 to 36,000 deaths. So, you know, this is a big deal, and this is just the seasonal flu. Imagine in the case of a pandemic that's rapidly spreading, even if you had the perfect vaccine, it takes your body 2 weeks to respond to the vaccine to build an immune response. And that's if you have a healthy immune system. So, you know, there's clearly areas of improvement for vaccines. This is an completely different approach. We have, it's a bispecific molecule that has a very potent antiviral small molecule on one end. So in and of itself, it is virucidal. And we have attached it on the back end to a fragment of a human antibody, and that antibody fragment confers an additional mechanism of action. It actually provides a localized immune response right at the site of infection, and also confers this once a flu season exposure. Plus, it directs the drug to the lung, where the virus resides. So multiple benefits here, which explain some of the very robust results we are seeing.
Great. And one can imagine some pretty huge ramifications if the good results you're seeing keep coming back. How do you see these being implemented in existing real-world health systems?
You know, when I say we, meaning collectively, all of the people who have, you know, probably collectively, well, you know, hundreds of years of experience in drug development, have never been exposed to a program that has not demonstrated a weakness. So, you know, typically when you're at this stage of development, there's some liability in any drug, right? You know, it's, well, look, it's very potent in vitro, but in vivo it's cleared very rapidly. So, you know, we're going to have to administer this twice a day. Or, you know, it's potent, yeah, but there's this toxicity limitation, so we can't administer it to the desired level in vivo, so we're going to miss these strains, right? So we have yet to find a weakness in this program, and that may owe to the fact that it's just a completely novel approach. And so there are opportunities here as a broad-based preventative or for as use in as a treatment as well. So we compared this head-to-head with existing influenza drugs such as Tamiflu, and we found that we can expand what is called, you know, the efficacy window. So with Tamiflu, if you were to start manifesting some signs and symptoms of the flu today, hopefully that's not the case, but if you did, and you might, if you're like me and many other people, you're going to try to tough it out and say, well, let's see if I get over it tomorrow and or the next day. And you don't if it's the flu. And then you make an appointment, you go see the doctor or you go to CVS or whatever, you get a script for Tamiflu. Well, if you take that first tablet greater than 48 hours after the first signs and symptoms, that drug is not going to work. What we have shown for CD377, at least in animal models of infection, is that we can expand that window to 72 hours, an additional day to treat that infection. And that is a very important distinction. So it appears to work very quickly as a treatment, but at the same time, the animal studies we've done shown that we could administer this a month in mice, a month before initiating the infection, and it confers 100% protection. And because of the difference in body size between mice and humans, 1 month in mice represents about 3 months in humans. So this is why it gives us confidence that this could potentially be a once per flu season preventative, as well as a very rapid treatment.
So to move back to rezifungin, could you provide some foundational info on where this fits into the antifungal treatment landscape, particularly what makes it different from other antifungals in the same class?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so rezifungin is a member of the echinocandin class. There are three other members of that class that are currently available commercially, one by Pfizer, one by Merck, and one by Astellas. Those are virtually identical. They are once-a-day, one-hour infusion. The echinocandin class is the newest class of the three broadly used classes of antifungal drugs. Known for two attributes. Number one, by far the safest class of drug with no drug-drug interactions. And number two, it is the standard of care per guidelines for the treatment of candidemia and invasive candidiasis. The currently available echinocandins are better than any other drug available, antifungal drug for candidemia invasive candidiasis, which is why guidelines in the U.S. and Europe specify that these need to be first-line therapy. The problem is that they are being used in the hospital, but not outside the hospital. And this is, and why is that important? And the importance is that you get a fungal infection in the hospital, so there's a strong desire to discharge patients as soon as possible. Now, technically and per guidelines, these patients should be discharged on echinocandin, but they're not, because that would necessitate that the patient come back once a day for a one-hour infusion, and that's simply not practical. So what physicians are doing now is they get that initial dose of an echinocandin in the hospital, but then they're being discharged on an azole. The azoles are an older class of drug. You probably are familiar with the name fluconazole. There are a lot of drug-drug interactions with azoles, and people with fungal infections tend to be what are called complicated patients, meaning, you know, they're hospitalized for something else, be it surgery, cancer, or whatever. They get the fungal infection in the hospital. They're discharged on a lot of other drugs and now are being given a drug, an azole, which has very well-known drug-drug interaction. And those that could be lethal, meaning that it changes the exposure of those other drugs to the body. They are also poorly tolerated and have a high rate of resistance. So these patients are being discharged on an inferior drug, and I mean that in the statistical sense, meaning that the last clinical trials that have tested an echinocandin against an azole, the echinocandin has come out statistically superior. And so there is a strong desire to find an echinocandin that can be used in the outpatient setting, and that's exactly how we are developing Rezafungin, as a means to provide physicians an option to treat their patients consistent with the guidelines on a superior therapy that can eradicate the infection.
Thanks. So you've given us a lot of great information about these technologies and therapies. Is there anything else you would like to add or touch on about what Cidara is working on?
Well, clearly we're in, you know, the infectious disease space with CloudBreak. We, you know, that is a true platform. So we're expanding into other viral infections. It seems to work particularly well in respiratory infections because the drug concentrates to the lung tissue. So we have other respiratory programs that are early stage. It is certainly the topic of partnering discussions because it is completely novel and could be, could represent a fundamentally new approach for these viral infections. So we're very excited about that. I think more broadly, there are some opportunities that we may see legislatively that could fundamentally change reimbursement for products such as this and Rezafungin. So you'll see some news coming out of CMS, potentially out of Congress with the Disarm Act, that could change reimbursement for products that treat patients in the hospital. So we're very watchful for news in that arena.
Definitely. And good news would be good. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now we're going to be speaking with Dr. George Thompson, an associate professor of clinical medicine at the University of California Davis School of Medicine. Dr. Thompson is an infectious disease clinician and an expert in the mycology infectious disease field. He was an investigator in the phase 2 trial of Rezafungin and is currently enrolling in the phase 3 RESTORE trial. So, Dr. Thompson, thank you so much for joining us. If you could give us just a brief introduction to yourself and your background before we jump in.
Yeah, I'm Dr. George Thompson. I'm an associate professor of infectious disease at University of California Davis Medical Center. And my clinical and research interests both really focus on patients with invasive fungal infections, which make up about half my practice, and the other half is really spread out amongst the bread and butter infectious disease pathogens. So Rezafungin is a novel echinocandin with a long half-life. It's about 7 days, and that has some potential advantages over currently available echinocandins with really a very favorable pharmacokinetic, pharmacodynamic pattern. So being able to give a medication with that high of serum concentrations and also that half-life really allows us to leverage the treatment of our patients to really predispose them to have a more favorable outcome with that type of pharmacokinetic parameter.
Great, great. And I can imagine with that over other echinocandins that there's a possibility to have better treatment adherence for outpatient type of administration with that 7-day you were speaking about?
Yeah, I think that it certainly could help compliance just since it's an intravenous formulation. We can give it to the patients and we know it's around for the next 7 days. It has some big advantages for our patients that are in the hospital, say getting chemotherapy or other medications that may really predispose them to nausea. So an intravenous formulation is, great, but certainly is not what sets it apart from the other echinocandins. It's really that the high levels that get into tissue and the blood and also the long half-life. And we think it can even get into sequestered sites that may even potentially prevent the development of resistance on therapy.
You were involved in the phase 2 trial, that's correct?
Yeah.
Could you give us a bit of background about the study design there and what the main takeaways were?
Yeah, sure. So the phase 2 study for rezafungin really was a prospective study. Patients were randomized to one of three different groups. There was conventional caspofungin dosing followed by oral fluconazole. And then the other two arms both contained different concentrations of rezafungin. So they either got 400 milligrams dose followed by 400 milligrams a week later or 200 milligrams a week later, really to look at a number of different, dosing algorithms, pharmacokinetics of the drug. And really what we saw was the most favorable results were seen in the rezafungin 400 milligram followed by 200 milligram dosing strategy. Patients really numerically did better in that group. It was not a study that was powered for efficacy in that group. So it's even though we saw numerically patients do a lot better in that group, it's probably a bit too early to claim superiority over the other groups. But that dosing strategy is what's going to be used in the ongoing phase 3 study. So the phase 3 study is ongoing, and that'll be patients will be randomized to one of two groups, either the rezafungin 400-200 group or caspofungin followed by fluconazole, and that's for patients with candidemia or invasive candidiasis, which is really, I think, really a much-needed study. The phase study, showed us that rezafungin probably clears blood cultures about 24 hours faster than caspofungin, so that has some potential real advantages for our patients in terms of resolution of infection, but also hopefully, time to discharge from the hospital. So I think this is a much needed study and follow through that has, potential to really impact our patients' care.
I mean, on that subject, what do you see for clinicians and patients, the implications if these positive results we've been seeing for rezafungin just keep coming, especially in this phase 3 trial, and this becomes a more commonly used treatment?
So one of the other things that's interesting is another phase 3 study, which is going to look at rezafungin as prophylaxis for high-risk patients for not only yeast and mold infections, but also pneumocystis. I think that is a big advantage. A number of new compounds have been developed for the treatment of numerous leukemia and lymphomas, and those new drugs typically have drug-drug interactions with the triazoles. So if we can put those patients on prophylaxis with rezafungin and avoid azoles so that they can continue their chemotherapy uninterrupted, that really would be very helpful and a big advance in the treatment of these patients.
So this is really having outside of just in the way that infectious disease kind of almost always becomes interdisciplinary, this is really having kind of broad impact.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, our patients continue to become more complicated each year. There's new medications developed every year for the treatment of their underlying lymphoma, leukemia, et cetera. So really coordination of care with our oncology and hematology colleagues, our pharmacists and colleagues in the ICU, these are really integral conversations in the sort of the total care of these patients as
you know, their care continues to be complicated yearly by the development of new medications, new comorbidities, and the novel risk factors that had not previously been recognized that predispose to invasive fungal disease.
All right. This has been really helpful. I really appreciate the information you've given. And so I'll just open the floor one last time. If there's anything you want to communicate to our audience about the work you're doing or anything like that, feel free.
Yeah, I think there's a number of novel antifungals in various stages of development, and resifundin's sort of the furthest along, and I think would really be a welcome advance in the treatment of invasive candida infections from these favorable PK/PD parameters. So I think we look forward to the results of this phase 3 study and seeing how this drug will be used clinically.
All right. Thanks so much, Dr. Thompson.
Thanks for tuning in to this Contagion Connect podcast. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And for the latest infectious disease news, be sure to check out contagionlive.com.